Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we are both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Gabriella. And we are both in Hyde Park together.
We're in Hyde Park. We're socially distanced walking. And we thought we'd say hey to you guys while we were seeing each other's faces, because it's just so, all so delightful.
It's so weird. There's like birds singing. I can see Emma's face. It's just a beautiful thing.
From a 2 meter distance ish. How is everyone on this glorious day?
I hope it is glorious. It's glorious today. This weekend's been bloody lovely, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely has. I've been to the park twice. I'm in London again. Yes. It's nice to be back in London in some ways.
In some ways, not nice to be. I mean, it's been a bit of a depressing weekend for London.
Yeah, like massively.
Yeah. Have you seen the far-right protests from yesterday? Have depressed me more than anything I've ever seen in my life. So that's not good about London.
No. It's been a bit of a weird one protest-wise, and made us all feel a bit sad about everything, really.
But yeah, let's not give those pricks any airtime. Other than that, I'm pretty chipper. Got my coffee.
I've got a nice latte, which you bought for me.
I did.
It was so nice of you.
Yeah, because I'm a nice person.
She is a nice person, listeners. I think we just both sound like weirdly content.
Yeah. It's been a while. It's just such a delight. It's a fucking delight to see you.
Should we talk about this episode while we're just like strolling?
Yeah.
This episode, firstly, I think we should talk about what's going on with Liz and Nick, because we're about to have a big reveal.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I do already know what's going on, obviously, but I'm so excited.
They're making the decision today. Well, they made it a few weeks ago, but they're making the decision in this episode about whether to go for adoption or egg donation. And if I were listening, I maybe would start placing bets.
That's a great idea. But you're going to hear quite soon, so maybe there's not enough time to place a bet. Maybe between your friend or your partner, if you're sitting there, you could like place a small bet, like a fiver or something. Spice it up.
And then after that, like, bombshell.
Yeah, we've got a lovely interview with Sital Savla, who is she is a digital marketeer, but also presence on the socials. She's been doing lots of interviews with, she's been on BBC, hasn't she, talking about her experience.
And she does food writing as well, which I read some of her stuff, and then I just got really sad about not going to restaurants anymore.
But that does make me like her a lot more, because if she writes about food, then that's pretty cool in my book. But she is another victim of the corona lockdown crisis, so she's going to tell us all about that.
Also, mad props to the guy who just cycled past us listening to actual tunes while on his bike. Absolutely great summer moment there.
Recording a podcast here, mate. Like, sorry, do you mind? And also the birds, can you shut up as well?
And also, if the wind is ruining this entire recording, then that's going to be sad. Anyway, yeah, so CETAL's coming up. And then we're talking to Professor Tim. We're talking about human papillomavirus.
It's a kind of important subject that lots of people have and lots of people are embarrassed about.
I've got it.
Have you?
Yeah, I literally do have it. Let's just say I'm not someone who slept around a lot, but got
really
HPV.
You're not, definitely not someone who slept around a lot.
Don't know who I caught that off.
Oh my God, this is great. Revelatory episode. It's incredibly common. So it's a concern when it comes to pregnancy and fertility.
Well, let's see what Professor Tim has to say about it. Anyway, in the meantime, you can follow us on socials. You can follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
Facebook.
Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
And please enjoy the show. Oh, wait. Before you enjoy the show, please like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, guys. Do it now. Enjoy.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
How the devil are you?
Well, I've struggled this week, if I'm honest. I have struggled this week. So we are now on week 4 of lockdown. Is that right?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Week forever.
Week forever of lockdown, and it's really hit me this week, I think, that life being back to normal is very unknown right now.
Yeah.
Have you found that it's not really affected you?
I don't know, it feels just like everything's on pause.
Yeah.
Which is... I don't know, neither good nor bad for me. I don't know. It just feels like everything stopped. There's nothing I can do. I think it doesn't help that I can't work at the moment.
Mm.
So it all feels a bit in limbo.
But and you haven't found that's affected your mental health?
Not too badly, no. I think I'm getting back to work soon, so that'll help get a routine more. But everyone's in the same situation, so...
Wise words there, Fox.
Yeah.
Wise words.
Very wise.
Anyway, would you like to tell the...
I thought we were going to go more into why you had a hard week this week.
Oh, yeah, sure. Just felt really static. I felt quite demotivated. I've been listening back to the podcast as it's been going out. Which has been, like, good and bad, because it feels as though we've come a long way. I've got that Fatboy Slim song in my head, sorry. Through the hard times and the good. It feels like we've come a long way, but it also makes me feel sad listening to how hopeful we were that this year was going to be different.
I think that sums up IVF in general, doesn't it, really?
And our experience of IVF, yeah.
Sometimes you're really, really hopeful, and then a week later...
I think more so as well our experience of IVF, because we've just had that massive roller coaster where, you know, everything has been just tossed up in the air and we're never really sure where we stand with it all. So listening back to me being all, you know... hopeful about this is going to be our year and we're going to be in a really different place by the end of the year than we were in the beginning, and the realities of that are getting further and further away.
Also, I think it reminds me that every time you think there's nothing else that could go wrong, that's we've experienced
it's the coronavirus bomb.
Which I know is a bigger deal to other people as but
I mean, we didn't foresee it.
Everything's relative, and
it is, yeah, yeah. We definitely did not foresee this one, no. Did we?
Indeed, we did not.
So, despite us having, me having quite an up and down week, I felt like I needed to do something in order to kind of pull myself out of the doldrums. So we sat and had a bit of a chat. And we've come to a decision about what we're going to do next. We don't have proper sound effects. Would you like to share?
I think you should share, to be honest.
So we've decided we're going to go ahead and do donor treatment. We've been really quite specific about, or prescriptive, I guess, is the right word, about what we're going to do. So we're definitely going to do one more cycle with a donor. And if that's a no-go, then that's it. And there's no backsies this time, because I cannot carry on my life waiting to make decisions about whether or not to do more IVF.
And what was it that led you to this, or led us to this decision?
Well, I think it was a lot to do with looking back, or looking at the potential of the rest of my life, and thinking about the thing that I would regret, and if it would be a regret of mine to not just try one more time. And I think it probably would be. And I think that actually, I didn't massively ever emotionally connect with adoption, even when we went to the information evening. And, you know, we've read these books and we've heard people's stories and we've spoken with people, and it just never fully connected with me emotionally. And I think that was probably quite telling. Not to say that that's not something that I can invest in the future, emotionally. I think there was just that blockade in my heart.
I think you're always leaning towards donor rather than adoption.
Yeah, I think I probably was. And I think probably I was, because it was an option, because it was another bite of the cherry. It was another shot at potentially having that, as you said, you know, before, bit of normality in our lives. You know, I've had messages from quite a few ladies who've, you know, been successful with donor conception, and it is almost like they then get that bit of normality that we crave so, so badly. And I'm just not quite ready to give up on that yet, I don't think. And that's why probably I don't feel like I could have fully connected with adoption, because there was that option still out there. And I never thought it was fair to drive down a road that I wasn't fully committed to.
No.
How do you feel now that we've made a decision?
Well, it was positive we could have carried on straight away. It's been good to make a decision after the uncertainty of the last failed round.
Yeah.
When it felt like a full stop almost.
Yeah. It definitely feels as though we've got, well, we will have at some stage, at some unknown months in the future, some momentum again.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. When this podcast goes out, we might be out of lockdown.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. I tell you what I'm feeling. I'm fucking terrified. because even though we've made this decision, and I'm in that 51%, I'm sure that this is what I want, that little 49% of me is jumping up and down going, but what if it's the wrong thing to do? What if it goes tits up? What if you put yourself in the hope zone again and your IVF luck keeps going as it has done, just goes on the swanny?
I'm a bit worried because the pressure's on me. Come on, guys. What if we spend all this money and my guys weren't performing as they should?
Then that's what we've done. I'm not saying that because I'm thinking that that's going to happen. I'm saying it because factually that's what will have happened, and we'll know then that probably us having a genetic child together is not the right thing. And then we close that door and we open the next one. Because the one thing that we know for certain is that we want a family.
Indeed.
So, like someone said to me, if you don't think it's going to work, then why are you even bothering? Which is a very valid point. You know, so we can't think that way. We can't think that, you know, I understand that you feel pressure, but we can't think, oh, but what happens if this goes wrong and this goes wrong? Because we know I'm an overthinker, and the more things like that you put into my head, the more things I'm going to overthink about. And I'm already scared enough as it is.
Yeah, me too.
I was going to say, it sounds like you feel very similarly to me.
Yes.
I mean, ultimately, it's more IVF, isn't it? It's more putting our hearts, hopes and money in the hands of science.
Yeah, I still think adoption is very viable, and it's something that does excite me. So if this, I suppose we've still got that, if that's...
It's really difficult to talk about, to not talk about adoption, I think, as a third option, which, you know, it really is not a third option.
No.
At all.
I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think if we could do it both at the same time...
Go for it.
And I not mean whichever one's successful first, I mean...
Just all of it. Yeah. Just have them all.
Come on.
I just feel like while there's still that element of scientific hope, I'm just not sure that I can fully close that door yet. And I feel like a really bad person.
No.
I feel like a really bad person. And the only reason I'm voicing these concerns or these deep, dark feelings out loud is because I'm hoping that there is, you know, hopefully there's people out there who feel the same way and who, if I had to hear someone else say it, might make them feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Was it you again a bit emotional at Britain's Got Talent the other day?
Yeah, with the little boy. With the little boy in the fostering. Was that the one?
All of them, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have them all.
Well, I mean, I am due my period, so it's probably got quite a bit to do with the fact that I'm so emotional. I cried at an episode of New Amsterdam earlier on because a lady had to give her dog away.
Anyone would.
I mean, it was really sad, but I'm at
what
that level
then?
Of emotional.
Did they get the dog back?
We didn't get to find out.
Oh, that's just disappointing.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it. That's the only thing I would be interested in. It's the only thing that pulls my heartstrings.
Yeah, yeah. So having decided that we are going to go for a donor, we then told our parents, who I think were quite unsurprised.
Yeah.
And generally very supportive. In all senses, really. I think, I don't know, it's one of those things that you are potentially sharing quite an intimate thing with your family, i.e. that possibly a genetic child, or a child of yours, sorry, is not going to be genetically linked to one of you. And you fear a bit of judgment, I think. I mean, I certainly do. Especially because, as we all know, I feel like a bad person because I'm choosing this at the moment as an option.
Not a bad person, are you?
Over adoption. It does make me feel... It does make that fear of judgment a lot more significant. But, you know, everyone was really cool about it, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't think there's many people can judge, really, because not many people realistically are in our position that have to make this decision.
No.
In the long run.
No, and we've both come, you know, we're both very open people, so we come from a breed of open people.
Because we're coming from a position where we found out we can't have children just without a little help, and then we've had to make decisions to do IVF, and we've gone through IVF and that hasn't worked as we wanted it to, and now we've had to make this decision again, so we're too deep into this.
We are very deep into this, you're not wrong. So, yeah, the fear of judgment, of telling our families, was completely unfounded, and everyone was really supportive of it. Just got to get out of this lockdown now and figure out what we do next, I think.
Take it they don't do home visits. Not that that's allowed anyway, but...
No, it's not allowed. I don't think they do home visits, though. So the next step is to more...
Can't put my sample in the post.
No. I mean, you could, but Royal Mail probably wouldn't be very happy about that.
I doubt they'd get it there in an hour anyway.
No, that's true. That's true. Back to more... I was going to say what our next plan is, next step is. You done with the sperm chat?
Sure.
Okay, great.
I thought it was a valid concern.
It was a valid concern. So next, we're going to be seriously searching the donor bank, because I think we are going to go with the London Women's Clinic. We know them. We've been there before. And they do have a bank of donors with frozen eggs ready to go, which means that hopefully... Once this is all done with, we'll have made some moves and some decisions, and we won't be waiting that long. I say that with, you know, very big fingers crossed, because we know our luck. So anyway, so that's what we're going to do next. So donor cycle it is, and just need to find us some eggs now.
Nip down to Tesco's.
I don't think there's that kind of eggs, love.
No, it's the big one.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll be off to Tesco's, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cetal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. You know, yours was the first podcast that I listened to when I discovered the TTC community, so
really?
It is an honour to be here. Thank
Aww.
You very much. Yes, I laughed and I cried.
That's so nice
it was hear. After my second cycle failed, so I was extremely emotional, but it hit me in all the right places.
Oh, what a lovely
Thank
thing
you.
To say. Well, in that case, you know exactly what's going to happen next, which is that we're going to ask you about our journey. Your journey.
Yeah, it is a word that I find extremely annoying, but it sort of encompasses the experience quite nicely. And,
it does. We've tried
and
really
Neil and
hard
I are still
to
on
find
it.
Other words.
So the journey, yeah. My husband Neil and I guess it all started when we had a surprise natural pregnancy about 4 years ago. Mm. And it was actually Christmas Day when we found out, which was sort of our little festive miracle. Mm. Unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. And a few weeks later, we went on to have a miscarriage, which was absolutely devastating. But in a way, the plus side was that I realised how much I wanted to have children.
Right.
So up until that point, Neil was the one who was ready to start a family and had been for a few years. But I was sort of reluctant for various reasons. I was worried about losing my independence and identity, and then physically just being pregnant as well was a bit scary. And yeah, so it wasn't an entirely negative experience from that perspective. But I also realised that we'd been married for 8 years at that point, and it was our sole pregnancy, so the alarm bells were really sounding loudly. So it was sort of a catalyst for us to be a bit more proactive in our family building plans. So we went to the GP, we had a year of basic tests and appointments, and we embarked on our first round of IVF. Unfortunately, that was unsuccessful, and we didn't qualify for a second round because I didn't have any embryos to freeze. And so we would have had to pay for a second round at that point. And we decided to follow the advice of some friends and family who recommended a private clinic where they'd had success. Mm. We then went on to have two unsuccessful rounds there, unfortunately. But that's where the donor conversation first started. And that planted the seed at that point. We changed clinics after two cycles at the private clinic because our previous one only offered known donor cycles and we didn't have anyone to bring to the table. It wasn't an option for us. So we thought if we change clinics, we can have another fresh cycle, which would be our fourth. And then if that didn't work, we could also explore the possibility of an anonymous donor cycle. And so that sort of brings us up to the present. And we started our current and fourth cycle at the end of February, went as far as the egg collection. And then COVID came along and ruined all of our plans, closed all the clinics, and we froze our embryos. But we were meant to have a little bit of a delay anyway, as we were doing pre-genetic screening for the first time. So our embryos were frozen and then a biopsy taken. So we were waiting for about a month, a couple of weeks for the results, and then a month to be at the right point in my cycle to start the transfer. And that's the bit that got delayed due to COVID-19. So at this stage now, I'm waiting for my bleed, as they call it, and then I'll be able to prep my lining and move on with the frozen embryo transfer, which hopefully should be within a matter of days.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. So we caught you at a crucial time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but I'm lucky. I heard that some people were in the middle of stimulations then everything just shut down, which I can't imagine what that feels like.
And so why did you start having the conversation about donor eggs? Was there, had you gotten information about why the other cycles hadn't worked potentially? Or
so the conversation about donor eggs came up because in the first few cycles, we only ever got about 3 to 4 eggs. The most I've ever harvested has been 6. And so that points to a low ovarian reserve. And we didn't get that diagnosis until later down the line. And that was one of the options that came up during our debrief. So whether we would go ahead with a fresh cycle, it wasn't looking too bad. But, you know, if we'd considered a donor cycle, then the success rates would be higher.
How have you approached that decision? What's it? Have you kind of, you're obviously about to do a cycle with your own eggs, but how are you feeling about donor?
I think I've had some time to get my head around it, so I'm okay. I feel quite optimistic about the process, but there are quite a few concerns, I guess. My main one would be, is it fair? Is it selfish to go ahead with an anonymous donor? Ideally, it would be great if we could introduce someone else into the process and we know them, we're comfortable, but it's quite invasive, really intense. They would also have to prep themselves and do the injections, not to mention the cost and the counselling. So I don't know if I'd feel comfortable asking someone, really. But then with anonymous donors, yeah, there is that element of selfishness. And then also for the child, how would I start to talk to them about it? At which point, you know, how would I introduce that? It's not so much what other people would think. That really doesn't bother me so much. But just how would the child feel about it? And are we just being selfish, going ahead with our dreams and not considering that so much? And then I think the possible rejection as well, once they do find out how they were conceived, would they look at us differently? Would they judge us for making that decision? Would they reject us ultimately? I think that's a real fear.
It's so complex.
Yeah. And then also there aren't that many Asian donors as well, which is probably why it takes people a lot longer to go down that route.
Yeah, I didn't want to come onto that.
Yeah, I think it's probably because people don't think to do that. There's not a lot of promotional marketing around that point. So even if we did go down the donor route, we'd be looking at maybe a Spanish donor as well, because our clinic is a satellite clinic in London. They're actually a Spanish clinic, and so they have at least 10 clinics over in Spain in various locations. And that's one of the reasons why we chose them, because it would speed up the process a lot. The characteristics as well, the features are quite similar in the sense dark hair, darker complexion, dark eyes. So, and we would, by the sounds of it, have a lot more information about the donor's background as well, which is important, of course.
You kind of segued onto our next question a little bit there, talking about the kind of going through fertility treatment when you are Asian and part of the Indian community. You've spoken about the need to destigmatize fertility treatment. I mean, why is the stigma there, and how does it manifest itself?
I think that's such an extensive topic that we could actually dedicate a whole podcast series to it. It's South Asian communities, because they're patriarchal, it's really hard to discuss anything to do with women's bodies in general and female diseases, in inverted commas, even amongst women. So with men, it's even more difficult. And actually, last night I put up a post on Instagram about a documentary that I watched on Netflix called Period, End of Sentence. And it's about the stigma associated with periods. So if we go right back, even before fertility, we're really not even comfortable saying the word period sometimes. It's just considered as something dirty and shameful and embarrassing. Yeah. And so if we can't even talk about that and be aware of our cycles, it's even more difficult to talk about fertility. And I think there's a lack of knowledge as well, especially in rural communities in India, where this documentary was based. And it was really sad to see that the expressions on these women's faces when the interviewer mentioned the word period. They just were so embarrassed. So when it comes to fertility, and if there are any issues, I think the expectation is within the first year or two of being married, you should have your first child. Sort of an unspoken rule, really. And you may not even be ready for that. In our case, I was living with my in-laws for the first 2 years of our marriage. And so the thought hadn't really crossed our minds. We weren't ready. We didn't live together before we got married. And so we wanted to just enjoy a bit of that time. Once we found our own place, we wanted to make the most of our independence and live life a little bit. And then before you know it, 4, 5, 6 years have gone by. And that's when we started thinking, okay, we should probably settle down a little bit and start having, you know, considering family planning. But I think if you're struggling to conceive at that time within those first couple of years of marriage, it's really hard to speak up about it, because you'll just get these incessant comments, and questions would be something like the need to hurry up and have children before your womb shrivels up and it'll be too late. You know, the biological clock is ticking. Yeah, that was something that I heard, and I wasn't actually trying to have a baby at that point, but if I had been, it just would have been like being poked in an open wound and really
dagger. Yeah.
It would have been like a dagger to the heart, but as it was just mortifying and really embarrassing, because it was sort of at a family gathering. But things like that, to even just questions about when you're thinking about having kids and your career can wait, etc. So it's the whole spectrum of mildly offensive to really, wow, did they say that out loud? And it's always, I feel that these comments are well-intentioned. Anything that has been said to me, even the most offensive ones, I don't think it's been said with malice, and people don't realise how much it hurts. I think it's just a natural question, really, to ask when someone's having children. And because now I'm so sort of immersed in the TTC bubble, I realise how painful that can be. But not everybody has that sort of awareness and education. And then there's so many
Especially other stigmas. The generations who've gone before us. Sometimes.
True. And so along with periods and infertility, there's also the stigma of just having one child, or if you do have children, if they're all daughters, that is a problem as well, because sons are revered in South Asian communities for kind of social and economic and religious reasons. They perform the last rites at their parents' funerals. After they get married, they stay traditionally with their family in the family home, and support their parents financially as well as they get older. So just having one child is problematic too. And then male infertility. If all of these topics were not were already difficult to talk about, then if a male factor infertility diagnosis is given, that's even more difficult to handle because a woman is often blamed. And so you won't want to speak out about it because you assume that you'll be blamed for something that isn't your fault. And then you're not about to say, well, actually, it's not me, it's my husband, you know, out of respect. And yeah. And then it's just difficult in general. And even speaking to my husband, he recently was on, we did our first live interview on BBC Asian Network a couple of weeks ago. And he spoke for the first time publicly about mental health and anxiety and how anxious he felt going through those first few cycles when I was dealing with it. And he felt that his role was to support me and not really to discuss his emotions so much. I took priority.
Yeah.
And he sort of suppressed his feelings, which eventually bubbled up. And even though I was asking about it, he didn't really want to open up that box, you know, and crumble just to be my rock, basically. So,
good but for it him is, for talking
men
about
are often
it,
forgotten, unfortunately.
Mm. They are definitely the focus when you're going through fertility treatment is on the woman, even if it is male factor as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The old you've got the easy bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That everyone's heard.
Yeah.
So you did that interview on BBC Asian Network. What was the reaction from the listeners?
It was fantastic, actually, from everybody, from friends and family and people phoning in. And it's very rare to hear Asian males talking about fertility and their feelings in general. I think it takes a lot for them to work up the courage to say, I felt anxious and I felt helpless and I didn't know what to do and I didn't know what to say. And Neil was also the one who was administering the intramuscular injections for me because I was fine with all of the subcutaneous ones, but in a couple of my cycles, I had to take the dreaded two-inch progesterone injections, which goes into the backside or in the thigh. Yeah. And I just couldn't do that. I tried to work up the courage to do it myself. Oh, yeah, that too. It was just, yeah, my courage failed me. And so thankfully he was able to do it, but to administer an injection while your partner's crying and upset and you know that it hurts as well, but you have to inflict that pain on someone. It's really, really difficult. And we did that for about 2 weeks, twice. Yeah.
Somehow my husband didn't have a problem with doing that.
Sadistic John.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. That's worth a separate conversation.
Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously you're doing a really good job of trying to kind of change that situation. What else do you think needs to happen to kind of move the conversation forward and make it okay, I guess, for people to go through this and not feel ashamed by it?
It's a good question. I think things are changing. People are starting to speak out a bit more. But like I said, I'm sort of in that TTC bubble on social media, on Instagram.
Yeah, everyone's talking about their ovaries.
Oh, God, yeah. So it's very normal for me. And I've been speaking about this now since Mother's Day last year. And that's when I published my initial blog post about the miscarriage and then the first two cycles and how different they were on the NHS and in the private clinic as well. And the response to that was really overwhelming. I thought that I would actually get some criticism from people saying that I was bringing shame on my family and community, or that maybe I was being selfish by doing IVF and I should just accept that this is nature's wish and God's will, or even other people saying I was doing it for the attention maybe. But it was nothing like that. I was just inundated with kindness and compassion and support and thanked. I had a lot of messages from friends and family and strangers just saying that they thought I was really brave for speaking out and that they wished that more people would do that because it made them feel less alone and less ashamed. Because unfortunately, the face of infertility is still predominantly white. You don't see or hear many Asian voices because it is such a stigma. And I really hope that by talking about it, publishing these posts and doing these interviews, that it reaches the people who really need the support, because it isn't your fault. So I just want people to feel less alone, less ashamed, and less abnormal.
But since you did that interview and since you published that blog post last year, have you seen a change in how the community reacts to infertility and how open it is?
I have done. And I think because I've been more open in talking to people about it, they feel more comfortable asking me questions about the process, what's going on, the latest with the clinics as well. You know, some people were saying, we heard they're closed. How does that affect you? And how do you feel about that? And what are the next steps? Whereas before, people didn't really talk to me about it that much. It would just be the questions of when are you having kids and what's happening? You know, the usual kind of indiscreet comments. So there is a change, but I appreciate that it takes time because we've been keeping quiet about it for so long. And there are many people who would like to talk about it, but they can't because they have to take their partner or their family's feelings into consideration, which is perfectly understandable. Or they just don't feel quite brave enough to put themselves out there like that. It is makes you feel very vulnerable when you're sharing something so personal. And you do open yourself up to criticism, and that's a fear, but I didn't get any of that. Just people grateful that there are now Indians talking about it. And it does affect us because infertility doesn't discriminate.
I always think that our like online TTC community is really like kind of gentle and almost bubble wrapped. And like going out into the big wide world, like going and doing interviews on the Asian Network and things like that. Very brave.
Thank you. I've seen a rise in Asian-led TTC accounts as well on Instagram, which I think is fantastic. There's a lot more. So I'm happy for anyone to DM me and then I can send them the links as well. There's so many resources out there. So I think my main message is for people to not feel alone because they're really not.
Going back slightly and kind of into your journey a little bit, when they started to talk to you about having low ovarian reserve, did you have any idea about what that meant for you or kind of have any inkling that that was going to be the case? Must have been quite shocking.
I think I sort of suspected that that was the case, given that they'd only got 3 or 4 eggs each time. Mm. So it wasn't a massive shock as such, but it's still really disappointing. And in a way, it's a relief that there is some diagnosis. It's not just the old unexplained infertility thing, which is highly frustrating. But we've had all the tests, you know, the high COSIs, you know, checking in the fallopian tubes and all the blood tests and things. So, you know, I'm totally fine with needles and scans and good old Wanda is not a problem. And you sort of laugh at it after a certain point. But yeah, I think it was a relief to have that diagnosis and then to be able to have the options spelt out. Okay, well, now we know what the problem is. What is the potential solution?
And you've had very different degrees of intensity when it comes to your IVF protocols. Mm. I mean, can you kind of talk about how they made you feel? Like, one thing I always found was a long protocol made me want to kill myself because it was just so much waiting.
The waiting is a killer. So when I was being asked a lot during the early lockdown period, how I felt about our IVF being put on hold. And it just is more waiting on top of waiting on top of waiting, because that's all you do. You wait for your blood test and then your scan, you go to a different floor and get something else done, see another consultant and wait to get your prescription, go to the pharmacy and wait some more. And then the dreaded 2-week wait right at the end, just to add insult to injury. My NHS cycle, in hindsight, it feels very light when I look back on it now compared to the private clinic. But at the time, it was just so overwhelming because I think I was in denial that I had to seek fertility treatment. And so I was just going through the motions and the jargon.
Other people do IVF.
Yeah, exactly. And it just all went over my head. And I was so glad that Neil was with me in the consultation because I didn't make any notes. I wasn't really listening, to be honest. And, you know, he was paying attention.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
I know.
It's still like being bombarded.
It was.
I was just like, I'll remember everything.
Yeah, like a rabbit in headlights. You know, I had no idea, you know, and it felt so weird and surreal. And then the large box of meds arrived at my door and I was taking it up the stairs. And when I was unwrapping everything, I saw the syringes and needles and all the meds and instructions, the sharps bin. And I just sunk to my knees and bawled my eyes out because it just felt wrong. I thought, why are we here? Do we really need to do this? Do I need to inject myself in order to get pregnant? Should we not just accept that I can't get pregnant and move on? Because this is horrendous. This isn't normal.
I hate that feeling of like, if only I didn't want a baby so much, we could go on the best holiday ever and be rich.
I could have nice bags and shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Nicer bags and shoes, I should say. But thankfully, Neil administered the first subcutaneous injection. And I was sort of looking in the other direction and saying, OK, just let me know when it's done. And he'd already done it. and I didn't feel a thing. So I thought, okay, it's not so bad. I'm lucky. And after that, I was just on a roll. So, you know,
yeah,
you know all the stories.
Amazing
about
how quickly you get used to it.
Exactly. Doing it in restaurants and kind of loading up and reconstituting in random bars and people knocking on the door thinking you're taking forever for another reason. But it's not as exciting, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think that first cycle was just really overwhelming. And then I went to the private clinic and that was a different level of intense. And actually the clinic I went to, the nickname is IVF boot camp. I've heard a few people call it that. And that's sort of how it feels, because for a month your life is on hold. From the first 10 to 14 days, you're being stimulated. So you're in every day for blood tests and scans, sometimes twice a day. Then you have to wait around for 2-3 hours for them to call you. After that, you get a prescription. Yeah, you have to make sure you have the right meds. They'll tell you you need to take it right now. So in the next 15 minutes or the next 2-3 hours, it's all you. If you're a planner, it messes with your mind a lot. So it's very intense.
You can't do anything else. You just have to camp outside the place.
Basically. Yeah, I thought that.
I read something about milk. What was the thing about milk?
Yeah, I had to drink a liter's cow's milk a day.
What?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. That was my reaction when they told me, like, what? Why? For the protein,
come
I believe.
Again?
Yeah, but I eat meat and fish and everything, so, you know, it's fine. And that wasn't even the worst part. I was told to stop exercising altogether. So I'm someone who loves spin class and HIIT and being active, and they said, no, none of that. Not even spin at 50% capacity, I was going to say. I don't know if that's the right word. Yeah. But yeah, intensity. Just walk. That's about all you can do. No yoga, no, definitely no swimming.
What? Why not?
Yeah. I think probably the type of women who visit that clinic tend to be high achieving, high strung.
Type A's.
Yeah. And so you have to tell them maybe don't run a marathon while you're being stimulated and during your 2-week wait. Yeah. Just take it easy. This is your time. So the nurse actually said, you know, most people are quite happy to hear that you're not allowed to exercise for a month. But I was quite disappointed, personally.
Yeah. Well, it's for your mental health as well, right? It's kind of, you know, it's an important part of your process.
Exactly.
Speaking of mental health, I know that, you know, even after 2 failed rounds, you've spoken about the ability to kind of get this positive outlook when you were going towards your 3rd. How did you do it? And how did it kind of impact your kind of going through that 3rd round?
So for the first couple of rounds, I was working full time, but I had a job which allowed me to be quite flexible. I told my bosses about it. I was up front and I was lucky that I got great reaction. They were both very supportive and that helped a lot with needing to attend meeting appointments. You don't know. It all depends on your body, of course. For the 3rd round, that was a bit different because I wasn't working and I was familiar with the private clinic. So everything that felt too much before, this time I knew it was coming. And so I could prepare myself and I could fully focus on the cycle because I didn't have any distractions of work and emails and chasing clients. And I know that for some women that distraction helps, but I personally saw it as a hindrance. I just didn't want to think about files and deadlines and submissions. So I was able to just sort of embrace the process, borderline enjoy it, I guess, because I was grateful to be there. I wasn't fighting within myself. I was quite angry for the previous round. I still hadn't accepted that we were on this kind of fertility journey, to use that word. So that helped a lot, I think. And from Neil's perspective, he said that because I was a lot calmer and a lot more positive, it was easier for him as well. So, yeah, he has been really very supportive. And because I was so up and down emotionally with the previous rounds, this time I was a lot more stable and it made things easier for him, and so I guess he was able to then address his emotions this time. There was space to do so.
Are you going to kind of capture that for the next round as well? Have you still got hold of that kind of positive outlook?
I think so, and I think the more I put out on Instagram as well, and the comments and the DMs that I get, and it really gives me a lot of strength. I know that there's a lot of people out there rooting for us and giving us support and crossing fingers and toes. And it helps during the tough times. And obviously there are moments where I feel really down and, you know, you get quite bitter about the fact that you're having to go through this, but at least we have access to these amazing services. Yeah.
Sital, it's been really, really lovely to have you on the podcast. We've got one more question left. And that is, what is your advice to any listeners from the Indian community who are struggling with their options, who are struggling to conceive? Like, what would you say to them?
I think the main message for anybody struggling to conceive is to not feel like you're alone, to not feel ashamed of yourself, because it's not your fault. You're not abnormal. It's just something that your body can't do, but there is a lot of advice and a lot of support out there. So definitely start by looking at the HFEA. They've got so many reports that I didn't feel strong enough and I wasn't in the right place to download at the time. But now I've started doing that and going through all the data that they've collated. And it is fascinating. It's good to know more about your body and what's available and how they're helping you. There's helpful clinic finder tools as well. And your lovely podcast, there's so many other support resources. So plenty of fertility podcasts, the TTC community on Instagram, websites like IVF Babble, Fertility Help Hub, etc. And then plenty of Asian run accounts as well on Instagram. So I would be happy to recommend those as well. And influencers are talking about it a lot more, which is fantastic. There was a beauty influencer, Nabila, who recently said, discussed her fertility struggles as well. So I think that goes a long way towards normalising these conversations. But just don't be alone.
And where can people find you on Instagram?
I'm at Savlafare. So that's SavlaFare. I always have to think about that twice. And it's the same handle. Yeah, so www.savlafare.com. And it's the same handle on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. And LinkedIn, which I probably should use a bit more.
Oh, yeah, no one really uses LinkedIn.
Shouldn't we all?
No. Just when you're looking for a job, really, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Well, hopefully, if anyone is out there, then they'll be able to get in touch with you. And,
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, it's been absolutely lovely. And hopefully we get to meet IRL soon.
I would love that.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F? We're talking about HPV, friends.
We are indeed.
We've just been Googling it because we're back in the park. As listeners may remember, we started here. Apparently, HPV can also be genital warts. I don't have those.
Yeah, well, I know that because a friend of mine has it and has the version where you can get genital warts. And I think that was a concern for her when she was pregnant, because I think then it can be a bit of an issue.
Well, I've got the kind that's like abnormal cells that can turn into cancer.
All really nice stuff.
It's all really fun and pleasant. I had to have this biopsy of my cervix, and it hurt so much. It was like pre-infertility, so I wasn't really used to investigations. It was very unpleasant.
And that's, I mean, as a lot of us know, things next to your cervix aren't very nice.
No, and biopsies aren't very nice either.
No.
Anyway, we've reached a windy area, so we're just going to pause for a minute. Okay, we're out of the wind.
We are out of the wind. We are nestling under a tree.
It's nature's studio.
It's nature's recording studio.
So we asked Professor Tim about HPV and what it means for fertility, and here's what he had to say.
So HPV is the human papilloma virus, and this causes warts. So people can obviously get warts on their skin, but a certain type of HPV can be picked up at the cervix, and that is actually one of the predisposition viruses for changes at the cervix that can obviously lead to cervical cancer. So that's why all young women now, or teenage girls, will be having an HPV vaccine. It helps protect against them picking up the HPV virus during intercourse and therefore being infected at the cervix. That's also why nowadays for the smear checking, smear tests, there's actually an HPV test that's done as part of that, because it's recognised that if HPV is picked up at the cervix, then if any cervical changes are picked up, that might be more likely to lead on to problems compared to if the woman is HPV negative. Certainly, just having HPV does not affect your fertility, and it will not be causing miscarriages. If people have had significant cervical changes and have needed, therefore, to have parts of the cervix taken away, so cone biopsies, loop biopsies, things like that, then again, generally that doesn't affect fertility and certainly wouldn't be causing miscarriages, but it can make an embryo transfer a bit more difficult. So there are some things to discuss about that. But again, I think with the HPV vaccine that's being given, that we'll be having fewer and fewer women going forward will be having problems with their smears, and importantly, fewer people will be needing treatment to their cervix. That's a very positive outcome.
Well, that's the end of the show.
That's it, guys. I hope you've enjoyed it.
We've enjoyed it, haven't we?
Yeah, is this the end of our walk as well?
No, it's not quite the end of the walk, but we are going to have to maybe do a little trot to see if we can find the others.
The men folk.
Next week, we are talking to the absolutely fabulous Sophie Payne.
Oh my God, I love her so much. She's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we recorded with her. It was an evening. I was in a dark room, you were in a dark room. She was in a bright room with bright pink hair.
Yeah, she totally shat all over us in terms of vibrancy. She brought the energy.
So we will see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week with Sophie.
Oh, should we say some thanks first?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you to Liz and Nick.
Oh my God, so exciting, so exciting.
Thank you to CETA.
Thank you to CETA. Thank you to ACAST.
Big thanks to ACAST, and a big thanks to Professor Tim.
And thank you to Hyde Park for lending us this wild recording studio.
It's been an absolute delight, mate.
It's fucking glorious.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.